John Johnson, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Today on Live, an all-new exclusive. In the field of plastic and cosmetic surgery, there are always new procedures being introduced. And the question is, do they work? Well, world-renowned plastic surgeon Dr. Paul Nassif of the Royal Household of Beverly Hills fame is here to discuss the hottest trends in plastic surgery, including the new Beverly Hills facelift, a procedure that he developed to create a more natural post-surgical look. Dr. Nassif also reveals the latest in technology when it comes to maintaining a youthful look. Dr. Paul Nassif, next, only on Live Today with John Johnson and friends and co-host Dr. Estella Snyder. Stay tuned. Dr. Paul Nassif, who has been in the spotlight for his very public divorce from Real Housewife Adrienne Maloof.
Basically, Adrienne and I have worked very hard. We put a lot of time and energy into trying to make this work. But, you know, unfortunately, we want to do what's best for us and our children.
But what you may not know is that he is considered one of the top plastic surgeons in the country. He practices the full scope of plastic surgery with an emphasis on aesthetic surgery. He even fixes other doctors' plastic surgery mistakes. Dr. Paul Nassif is a skilled facial plastic and reconstructive surgeon and is trusted with faces worldwide. His surgical prowess has been recognized internationally by the media, patients, and peers for his innovative surgical techniques. Known as a revision and ethnic rhinoplasty specialist, Dr. Nassif is sought after by patients from around the world for helping in correcting some of the world's most challenging complications. This is why he is trusted with noses worldwide.
I have great appreciation for Dr. Paul Nassif's results and his techniques and everything, the years he's put into this.
His work specializes in obtaining natural results in both rhinoplasty and aging face surgery at Spalding Drive Cosmetic Surgery and Dermatology in Beverly Hills, California. For rhinoplasty, Dr. Nassif uses his skill as an artist and a surgeon to shape the nose to fit the face, rather than make it appear artificial. Patients marvel at how Dr. Nassif is able to create a nose that is both functional and aesthetically pleasing. As a specialist in aging face endoscopic surgery, Dr. Nassif skillfully conceals incisions by performing minimally invasive procedures that reduce the evidence of scars. A procedure that he developed, called the anti-gravity facelift, leaves absolutely no visible scars and has been noted for achieving natural-looking results in the shortest recovery time. To accelerate the healing process, Dr. Nassif also uses state-of-the-art platelet gel therapy derived from a patient's own blood cells. Affiliated with top hospitals and medical schools in Southern California, Dr. Nassif has authored numerous peer-reviewed articles on facial plastic and reconstructive surgery and has been called upon to give medical conference presentations and lectures about the latest surgical technique. He teaches residents and colleagues at the University of Southern California and the University of California Los Angeles Schools of Medicine. Dr. Nassif has been a breakout star on Bravo TV's The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills for the past 3 years. He has also been featured on E! Entertainment, Doctors 90210. In addition, he has been interviewed on NBC and CBS Nightly News, the morning shows like NBC's The Today Show and ABC Good Morning America. He has also appeared on CNN and the BBC, Inside Edition, and featured in print media like People Magazine, USA Today, The LA Times, Wall Street Journal, and the Associated Press. And although Dr. Nassif is a pretty busy physician, practicing with all his patients, he's also extremely dedicated to helping patients who are less fortunate. He participates in Face to Face, a national organization that offers consults and surgery to victims of domestic violence.
Previously, she had trauma in that area where she fractured the whole cheekbone, so we wanted to fill that area in.
His other philanthropic activities include the Lymphoma Research Foundation of America, Race to Erase MS, Coach for Kids, the Arthritis Foundation, and Portraits of Hope, which is a creative therapy program that enhances the quality of life for hospitalized children. Dr. Paul Nassif is truly dedicated to the pursuit of excellence in the art of science of plastic surgery. His goal is always to surpass the expectations of his patients. Please welcome the talented, funny, fearless, best-selling author, and one of the best plastic surgeons in the country. And to top it all off, he is a genuinely really super nice guy, Dr. Paul Nasif, to Live Today.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Live Today with John Johnson, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, John. Are you here?
Hey, I'm here. How you doing?
How you doing? How are you? So here we are with Dr. Paul Nasif.
Yes, how you doing, Paul? Dr. Nasif?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me come on the show.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, yeah, we're excited to have you on. We are, I love plastic surgeons. I think, you know, you guys have such a great, do a lot of big service to, not just to make everybody look good, but also, you know, people who actually have disfiguring scars or injuries or, and the thing is, I think about plastic surgery today is that there's so many new techniques that are on the, that you hear about, you know, things like, you know, in the field of plastic and cosmetic surgery, there's always new procedures being introduced. And the question is, do they work? And, you know, what are the hottest trends? And I know that you've actually developed a new facelift called, I want to call it the Beverly Hills facelift procedure. Is it, am I naming that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. The Beverly Hills facelift.
Right. And my understanding, though, is that that procedure was developed to create a more natural post-surgical look. And can you tell us more about how that procedure works and why is it different from a normal facelift?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the thing, every time we talk about a facelift, usually that is a, you know, making a cut or an incision. Usually around the ears, and you're elevating, you know, the tissue up in a vertical or a natural direction. Just like your little co-host here, you know, Stella, who had, you know, her facelift on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, same type of a facelift. But the difference with this is, so one, you're performing the actual surgical procedure, but two, we're adding two things to rejuvenate the skin and to restore more volume because you lose volume, and that's adding fat to the face simultaneously. And then the third thing is adding something called PRP, or platelet-rich plasma. And platelet-rich plasma is a product of your own blood. We take a little tube out of blood while you're sleeping. We spin it down, and we get the concentrated platelets out of it. And those platelets have all these growth factors that help you heal and do all kinds of great things to your skin and actually to the survival of the fat that we just injected. So we inject it into the skin and also mix it with the fat that we use. So we increase the survivability of the fat, and also the PRP, it actually helps with your complexion, and it helps stimulate some collagen growth. So it's a kind of a triple whammy.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on here. So Estella, do we have a can we introduce Dr. Nasif properly?
Yes, I wanted to do that, but I guess Ron and I don't have it here with me. We apologize. Can you talk to Dr. Nasif for a second so I see what happened here?
Sure, that'd be fine. So we're missing our sound file, Dr. Nasif, so we're going to get that queued up, hopefully.
Absolutely, no problem.
For you. So tell me, I'm kind of curious, though, your background is, how did you get into becoming a plastic surgeon? You know, you have a lot of, you know, I look at your resume and it's so impressive, but, you know, it never answers the question as to why did you find yourself going towards plastic surgery?
Sure. I mean, I'm originally trained as an otolaryngologist, or, you know, the simple terms is ear, nose, and throat. You know, during that training, we, you know, deal with facial plastic surgery as one part of our training, especially with reconstruction and cosmetic rhinoplasty. And we, you know, we deal with cancers and tumors of the face and the neck. And so what we're doing is we're dealing with all the vital structures of the face and the neck. And so from there, since we do learn facial plastic surgery, it was something that I just absolutely fell in love with, you know, the artistry part of aspect of it, the very difficult revision rhinoplasties where you're dealing with functional and cosmetic concerns, functional I mean breathing, And it's something out of all my training in that 5 years of otolaryngology, this excited me the most. And that's how I went into it.
So the question earlier is because I think the thing is like whenever there's, you know, when you think about the nose, because you're really kind of famous, actually, I mean, worldwide for this idea of, you know, trusted with faces worldwide. As far as doing rhinoplasty, I mean, you're known as a, you know, as doing a revision in ethnic rhinoplasty.
Yes.
What is ethnic rhinoplasty by definition?
Sure. I mean, when we live in California, which is a melting pot of all ethnicities, and so if someone comes in, let's just say it's a Mediterranean person, and they have certain characteristics that are specific of that ethnicity, and let's just take, for example, you know, Persian.
Right.
An Iranian person. And sometimes some of the same characteristics are present in many of the noses, so they want to soften the ethnicity on that nose. Now, we're not talking about do a westernization rhinoplasty where you actually, you know, change the actual look of the nose, but if we want to soften it and make it a little bit less ethnic, that's what I do, whether it's an African-American, Asian, Middle Eastern, you know, what have you. I take it and I'll usually just make it softer as per their ethnicity.
Okay. You know, it's interesting that you talk about that because do you see a big trend towards, you know, I don't know, elongating the nose or making the nose thinner or from an ethnic perspective? Because I know, like, I just got back from Vietnam and Japan and China. And one of the biggest number one plastic surgeries in China right now is reshaping the eyes of Asians. It's like more Western. Do you find a trend, similar trends like that when you are doing rhinoplasties?
Well, I mean, I can tell you in the last maybe 5 years of change where patients were coming in wanting a complete Westernization, and what happened is they'd have a silicone implant put in their nose, you know, somewhere in Asia. And then usually it would become infected or dislodged and move. So I'd have to reconstruct the nose. So the answer now is patients do want a less ethnic nose, especially if we take the Asians in general. But they don't want to have it so westernized that it does not look at all like them. They want to keep some of the ethnicity. So we still have that. But you're right. For an Asian and African American, our goal is to elongate the nose, make the tip look smaller, make it look less wide from the frontal appearance. And the other area that's a huge population of patients is the Hispanic nose. Sometimes it can be either too small or too big, and our goal is to refine it so that it still fits in their ethnicity but looks better.
Cool. Now, you practice the full scope of plastic surgery, with emphasis on aesthetic surgery. It's even well known that you even fix other doctors' plastic surgery mistakes. Do you see a lot of that where you have to go back in and fix, you know, old surgeries from maybe old techniques that, you know, because as you know, there's always new techniques being developed. In fact, you're sort of like the pioneer on some of these new techniques for facelifts and rhinoplasty. So do you find that you have a lot of that type of a patient coming in looking to fix something that was done previously?
Yeah, I mean, that's where we come to the whole revision rhinoplasty and revision facelift surgery. I mean, those are the two areas I specialize in. I would say that more of it, though, is focused from patients around the world for revision rhinoplasty. And sometimes they've had one or two or seven other surgeries on their nose, and then my goal is to reconstruct it. And whether it's from trauma or just previous surgeries, and that's what I'm known for. And you're right. It could be if you did an aggressive rhinoplasty in the past to make it look cute. The problem is the nose deforms over years, and then you start seeing these deformities. And then our goal at that point is to soften it and make it look more natural and functionable. So that's where the revision is.
Isn't it that you had a surgery yourself, a rhinoplasty, and it had to be fixed as well?
Yeah, I mean, as a matter of fact, I had a rhinoplasty myself, and I was a patient back when I was about 17. And then my son, actually was on the TV show, jumped on my nose and broke it.
Oh, my God.
And it's funny, as he broke it twice within a six-week period of time, after I had it fixed once, and then when he broke it again, it was so bad that I had to have rib placed in my nose.
Wow. So, oh, my gosh.
And that's what I do. I add a lot of rib. As a matter of fact, John.
Now, I have a question for you, Dr. Nasif. When people say, I hear the term when people say, I broke my nose, what exactly happens to the nose that creates that you say it's been broken?
Well, there's bones in the nose. There's one on the left, one on the right. So there's two major bones. And if you get hit in the nasal bones hard enough, you could actually fracture or displace the nasal bones. And that's what that term is, as I broke my nose.
Is that what mostly happens?
No. Well, I mean, no. Mostly what happens is it's not someone that says, I come in and I broke my nose. It's more of someone comes in with, let's just say, a thick nose or a short nose or a big hump.
Right.
And they pretty much have a cosmetic concern.
You mentioned that you had a question regarding practicing out of town.
Sure. You know, we tweeted this today. You know, I have a sizable, Twitter following and a Facebook following. And, I mean, thank God for my fans. And I actually already had questions tweeted to us to ask on the show. I mean, there's three quick questions. Would you like me to answer them?
Yeah. Sure. Well, one of the questions, I'm getting emails right now. And actually, this is from someone from Dallas who's asking, where all do you practice? Now, we know that you have your practice with the Spalding Drive Cosmetic Surgery and Dermatology in Beverly Hills, but their question is, if someone wanted to come to you who didn't live in California, do you take out-of-town patients and or do you have another offices elsewhere?
Great question. About 50% of my patients from out-of-state, and out of those out-of-state patients, about 20% of them, 25% of them, our international patients. So, with our office, Anna at my office, and the phone number, by the way, is 310-275-2467. And what she will do, and there's a lot of information on the website about out of state, and it's spaldingplasticsurgery.com, Spalding with no U. It has a whole out of state travel section in there where we have hotels. Plus, we help coordinate the hotel reservation, car pickups. We pretty much try to do the whole, gamut of concierge. So I see patients in Los Angeles. I still occasionally will go to New York because I have a New York practice, and I'll see usually patients there every 8 weeks. I just visited Dallas. A friend of mine owns about 12 ear, nose, and throat clinics, and he wants me to start going to Dallas, which, we're evaluating that right now, but that seems promising. The other place.
Well, we'd like to see you in Dallas too, Doctor.
Did I say Dallas or Atlanta?
You said Dallas.
Oh, I meant Atlanta.
Well, we need you in Dallas. Okay. We need you in Dallas. Yeah. Forget Atlanta.
I'm sorry, it was Atlanta. But I'm also going to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and Dubai. Those are the other two places I go to.
Well, Dr. Snyder, can we introduce Dr. Nasif properly?
I think that you're going to have to do it yourself because...
Okay, I will do it. Dr. Nasif, I want to just take a moment just to introduce you kind of to the audience properly.
Sure.
So if you'll just give me a second here. So what I'll say about Dr. Paul Nasif, who, he may have been in the spotlight for his very public divorce from his Royal Housewife, Adrienne Maloof, but what our listeners may not know is that he is considered one of the top plastic surgeons in the country. He practices the full scope of plastic surgery with an emphasis on aesthetic surgery. He even fixes other doctors' plastic surgery mistakes, as we just mentioned earlier. Dr. Paul Nasif is a skilled facial plastic and reconstructive surgeon, is trusted with faces worldwide. His surgical prowess has been recognized internationally by the media, patients, and peers for his innovative surgical techniques. Also known as a revision and ethnic rhinoplasty specialist, Dr. Nasif is sought after by patients from around the world for help in correcting some of the most challenging complication cases. This is why he is trusted with noses worldwide. His work specializes in obtaining natural results in both rhinoplasty and aging face surgery, again, at the Spalding Drive Cosmetic Surgery and Dermatology in Beverly Hills, California. For rhinoplasty, Dr. Nasif uses his skill as an artist patients marvel at how Dr. Nasif is able to create a nose that is both functional and aesthetically pleasing. As a specialist in aging face endoscopic surgery, Dr. Nasif skillfully conceals incisions by performing minimally invasive procedures that reduce the evidence of scars. A procedure that he developed, called the anti-gravity facelift, leaves absolutely no visible scars and has been noted for achieving natural-looking results in the shortest recovery time. To accelerate the healing process, Dr. Nassif also uses state-of-the-art platelet gel therapy derived from a patient's own blood cells. Affiliated with top hospitals and medical schools in Southern California, Dr. Nassif has authored numerous peer-reviewed articles on facial plastic and reconstructive surgery and has been called upon to give medical conference presentations and lectures about the latest surgical techniques. He teaches residents and colleagues at the University of Southern California and the University of California, Los Angeles Schools of Medicine. Dr. Nassif has been a breakout star on Bravo TV's The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills for the past 3 years. He has also been featured on E! Entertainment's Dr. 90210. In addition to that, he's also been interviewed on NBC and CBS Nightly News, morning shows like NBC The Today Show and ABC Good Morning America. He's also appeared on CNN and the BBC, Inside Edition, and featured in print media like People Magazine, USA Today, The LA Times, Wall Street Journal, and the Associated Press. Now, Dr. Nassif is dedicated to helping patients who are less fortunate. He participates in Face to Face, which is a national organization that offers consults and surgery to victims of domestic violence. His other philanthropic activities include the Lymphoma Research Foundation of America, Race to Erase MS, Coach for the Kids, the Arthritis Foundation, and Portraits of Hope, which is a creative therapy program that enhances the quality of life for hospitalized children. Dr. Paul Nassif is truly dedicated to the pursuit of excellence in the art of science of plastic surgery. His goal is to always surpass the expectations of his patients. So let's officially welcome the talented, the funny, the fearless, best-selling author, by the way, and one of the top best plastic surgeons in the country. And to top it all off, he is genuinely a really super nice guy, Dr. Paul Nassif. So, Dr. Nassif, welcome officially to Live Today.
I love it. Thank you so much. That was a, you know, I sat down.
Well,
and my
your
God,
background is unbelievable. I got to tell you, you're the number of presentations that you've done, referee journals. You really, to me, are at the forefront of facial plastic surgery.
And you know what is the amazing thing? You know, I want to tell the public, you know, not only I know it under my skin, literally, you know, Dr. Nassif did my first and only plastic surgery that I have had a facelift. And one of my biggest concerns was to look natural. And, you know, he did a beyond belief amazing job. And furthermore, I've been in the surgery room with him, and I have seen him, how dedicated and how artistic is the work that he performs. I mean, he really puts his heart on it, and I would definitely recommend him, no question about it.
You know, I do think, Dr. Nassif, that have you weigh in on this, but I do feel like, you know, you can be a great plastic surgeon, have a wonderful skill, but if you don't have an artistic ability to understand, you know, facial features and what looks good, you know, you're not going to get a natural look. Where does that natural artist of you, where does that come from?
You know, that's a good question, you know, because I don't paint and I don't sculpt. But it's interesting. I think that since I've always had a picky eye since I was a child, I think that my aesthetic, you know, prowess is that it's just that I can look at something and make it look beautiful but still natural, especially when it comes to the nose. Or if you're redraping what we call skin from a facelift, you know, having it exactly in the right direction. Because if you change the direction of the skin, you know, a quarter of an inch, you know, you can make the person look like they've had surgery and look fake, if you want to call it that. So
right.
I think I just have to say overall, after all these years, one thing I've always you know, enjoyed was, you know, I have a good eye, I think would be the simplest way to answer it.
You really do. I got to tell you, the first time I ever, you know, knew of you was I was actually watching an episode of several years ago of Dr. 90210 that you were on there with, you appeared on there as a regular with Dr. Ray, I believe his name is, Dr. Ray?
Yeah, Robert Ray.
Robert, and you were doing and the episode I saw was you were doing a patient who had a hair lip, and she was having she'd had several surgeries, and she was very unhappy with the way she looked. Her nose looked off, and you came in and you actually did a procedure on her, on this lady on the air, and I don't know how many weeks after the surgery, but she looked so much different, so much better, and I was so touched by your bedside manner, by the way you talk to your patients, how you really seem to really care about them, and you take a personal interest in them. Can you tell me more about surgeries like that, where you actually go in and where someone's had a hair lip or where they really need some work done? How hard is that to reconstruct those type of surgeries?
Well, you know, that's one thing that, you know, my last 15 years of practice, over the last probably 10 to 12 is when I started, getting that reputation as a revision surgery. So I've been getting these hard, you know, that's a cleft lip rhinoplasty, it's called. Someone who has the cleft lip, and then they have some of the same, we call it deformities of the nose. From the cleft lip, you're going to have certain, aspects of the nose that are very difficult to fix. So that is one thing that I'm used to, and I fix these hard noses. And the other thing is when someone has had 3 or 4 or 5, even up to 8 rhinoplasties, where I come in and hopefully the last stop, and I'll reconstruct the nose. And it's a funny, one of the questions that was asked to me for today's show was they asked about rib. And, they asked me some questions because one of my main staples for rebuilding the nose, if the cartilage is already gone from the inside the nose, the septum from a previous septoplasty, I use rib. Sometimes I use ear, but I usually rib. And the questions were, how long does it last? Does it warp? Does it shift? Does it last lifetime? And the answer basically is, you know, it's a piece of your own cartilage. It gets incorporated into your nose. It lives forever. I haven't had any problems with it disappearing. It's not that fragile. The warping aspect of it, I have not seen any warping. And if I'm putting it on, let's just say, for example, I'm building up a nasal profile, we'll actually take so that it won't warp and cut a big piece of cartilage. We'll dice it up into small pieces, and we'll wrap it up in tissue called a diced fascia, diced cartilage fascia graft. And it looks like, it's an implant that we'll put made out of your own tissue on top of your nose.
Now, you've had that procedure done on yourself, correct?
Yeah, one thing that the audience does not know is I recently had a rhinoplasty when my son broke it last year. But I still couldn't breathe well, and there was still problems with symmetry. So I went about 6 weeks ago. I went and had another rhinoplasty where they used rib cartilage again. So I'm a patient as well as the surgeon.
So you know firsthand exactly what what works and what doesn't work.
So I've had it all done on me.
Would you sometimes would like to be your own surgeon?
I wanted to get a mirror there and operate on myself. Go, that would be wild. Yeah,
someone asked the questions. Yeah, I've got a question from someone who is asking, do you ever have any patients that you actually turn down surgery for various reasons?
Yeah, I've had, I would say overall in the practice about 7% is a good number that we don't want to do the surgery.
And what would some of the reasons be why you would not want to do surgery on someone, typically?
Yeah. Well, the number one thing is body dysmorphic disorder, where they come in, they think, oh my God, my neck is so fat, I want you to fix it. But then you find out that they're, young, and their neck looks great. Or the nose, they feel like it's too big and it's already pinched as it is, and they want to keep making it smaller and smaller and smaller.
We've seen a lot of these people on some of these TV shows where they want to look like Barbie or they want to look like their pet tiger or whatever, and they look so bizarre. I'm always surprised that those people always are able to find someone who'll operate on them.
It's very interesting because that was one of the questions that I was going to ask, me being a psychologist, people who have body dysmorphia or obsessive compulsive disorder, I think that these are people that doesn't matter what is it that you would do at all, they would always be unsatisfied. I mean, you can stand on your eyelashes and do whatever is it that you can do, but yet the patient is always gonna be unsatisfied, because it has to do with their mental disorder that they're having. Either they're constantly looking at the mirror, or they don't want to look themselves at the mirror for fear that something is wrong with themselves.
That's perfectly
how
said.
How do you tell Dr. Nasev? How do you when, if someone comes to you that maybe he's been turned down? Because I hear this a lot, actually. I have some friends who are plastic surgeons here in Dallas, and every now and then they'll come up, a patient will actually lie about their medical history in order to get plastic surgery, whether they might have a heart condition or some other condition that really would make them not a good candidate for surgery. You know, because, you know, a lot of times you go and you're under general anesthesia. One of the things that I think that you do, which I find unusual, is that you actually can do some facelifts under a general anesthesia now. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, we can do it under local anesthesia, which means they're awake and all that stuff. But, you know, the thing with the heart and stuff, even if you are doing under local anesthesia, it's the epinephrine, the some things that make the blood vessels get smaller during surgery. That's what causes the problem. And now, the two things that we look at, we want to make sure the patient's doing it for the right reasons, number one.
Right.
And two, we have to make sure that they are also psychologically stable to have the surgery. And that's something that Dr.
Yeah.
Snyder, you know, does. She'll come in and she'll actually, on occasion, she'll evaluate the patients if there's any concern to make sure they're doing it for the right reason.
Definitely. And the right reasons, you know, are to feel better with oneself, you know, and to make sure that the person is not obsessing about it. And most of all, is realistic about the outcome. That nothing is going to be perfect, and that it's going to take at least a couple of years for the healing to proceed and to happen. Otherwise, you know, the surgeons end up with lawsuits if the person is unstable, or the person has obsessive compulsive disorder or body dysmorphia, you know, because no matter what the doctor does, they're not going to be satisfied.
And body dysmorphia is really... Dr. Snyder, what is body dysmorphia actually?
Well, body dysmorphia, it's a mental disorder in which the person is completely obsessing and they're dissatisfied about a portion of their body. Generally, is facial, but sometimes it's their breast or their legs or their nose, their eyes, and they're constantly looking for approval, and they're constantly feeling that other people are watching them, but with negative reasons. You know, they're evaluating them and judging them as to having defects.
Almost like a paranoia, I guess.
Yeah, it becomes paranoia in a way, yeah. A lot of paranoid traits.
Yeah, but, you know, and the thing to add to that real quick is the other thing that we do besides the psychological evaluation and make sure they're doing it for the right reasons, we do a complete full medical workup to make sure that the heart and everything else is healthy.
You do. And that's what any good plastic surgeon should do, is do a full medical workup, right, Dr. Nasev?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I personally had such a medical workup, you know, that you cannot believe. You know, I prepared prior to my surgery for about 5 or 6 weeks prior with diet, with the not taking certain Dr. Nasev, you gave me a whole list of things that I couldn't eat or drink.
Well,
I mean, it was like...
There's a lot of preparation.
It was like a huge preparation.
Yeah, because I guess with the facelift, it's got to be... I've never had one. I've certainly had some minor work done, but is the recovery time, Dr. Snyder, did you find that to be very... I mean, are you wrapped in bandages, like, for your face wrapped in... How's that recovery time after a major facelift?
Well, for me, you know, it was at least like a couple of months. However, the bandage came out the day after, you know, and I just had a partial bandage. I stayed very comfortably in a hotel rehab center that I was like pampered beyond belief, and then I went home. And basically, I was out and about in a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks.
And the pain level wasn't that bad? You were in a lot of severe pain? Because, you know, sometimes like you see some of these plastic surgery shows, and, you know, after surgery they come out of it and they look like they're in agonizing pain. And I'm just wondering, you know, is that really true to life? Or
Well,
your experience?
You know, I think that, you know, in pain, regarding pain, is also each person reacts to pain in a different way. And there's some people that their threshold for pain is like minimal, and whatever is it that happened to them, they make a drama. My threshold for pain is, you know, quite high. So also, you know, I was always putting the emphasis on the outcome. So to me, the whole thing, it was like definitely worth it. And, you know, that made not to feel the pain as much. And, you know, having the capacity to distract yourself from the pain as well.
Well, I can tell, Dr. Steiner, you look, I mean, I would never know you'd had any work done at all. I mean, your face looks amazing. I mean, you're beautiful. Who knew Dr. Nassif that, had his hand in sculpting you a little bit. So what did you have done, Dr. Steiner, completely? I'm getting questions like, you know, what all did you have done, and what would you have done differently? Or is there another procedure you would have done? Are the questions I'm getting?
Well, I think that the one thing that we have to be careful, and I'm sure Dr. Nassif would agree with it, is that once you do like a plastic surgery, you become more aware. And at the beginning, you do keep looking at the mirror. And you have to be careful with that, not to become obsessive about it. And they also not to want to overdo it and want more and more and more surgeries after you have a plastic surgery. So you have to be careful with that. But the... You know, definitely, you know, at my age, I think it was like, you know, worth it. I did the facelift and the neck lift and the eyes, you know, it was because of the form of my eyes, I couldn't do the eye surgery. So Dr. Nassif did something that it was like amazing. And I would ask him, you know, to talk more about it. But he took fat from my stomach and he injected it into my cheeks. And that, you know, took care of the problem with the eyes. Can you explain more of that, Dr. Nassif? How does that work, you know, technically?
You mean about the fat going in?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's something...
I wish you took more fat from the stomach, you know, and, you know, I could donate.
You know, and, well, remember, that's where I'm a facial plastic, so I don't even do anything. I do harvest the fat from the abdomen or the hips.
Right.
So I take a little bit of fat out, you know, through a very small little stab, what we call stab incision, which is... of like about 2 millimeters in length, and then we remove the some of the fat, and then we'll spin it and clean it and purify it, and we add the platelet gel to the fat, and then we put a little small little poke in the cheeks, a little bit lower, and we pass this little what we call a cannula up into the area and gently pass fat underneath the skin, whether it's around the lower eyes, the eyebrow, the neck, you could add fat in areas that you need it.
Since it's your own fat, does that mean that when you harvest it from one place and put it somewhere else, does the fat like it takes hold there, or does it eventually go away? Is it permanent when you do that, Dr. Nassif?
Well, you know, a portion of it is permanent. I would think that when we do fat grafting and then we use the PRP, the platelet-rich plasma, I'm going to say that the average amount of fat survives is between 40% and 50%. Maybe
that's a lot more than I was thinking. That's great.
Yeah,
people are asking again. So if you want to know where to get more information on Dr. Nassif's practice, you can go to www.spalding, that's S-P-A-L-D-I-N-G, plasticsurgery.com, and there's everything you want to know about. If you want to go to Dr. Spalding, there's exactly
Dr. Nassif,
exactly what to do.
Not Dr. Spalding, Dr. Nassif.
I mean Dr. Nassif, sorry. If you want to go to Spalding Medical Center to see Dr. Nassif, there's his bios out there. Are you in practice by yourself, are you in practice with another doctor, or do you have a group of doctors you work with?
Yeah, I have a group. I have something called a fellowship where I take one head and neck surgeon every year that graduates. And they have to apply through a fellowship through the American Academy of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery group. And I take one doctor a year, and they train with me for a year and learn my techniques. And so I have that doctor with me now, and he just started on July 1st. He's from Albert Einstein. That's where he did his residency in New York. And then I have a new associate named Dr. Don Yu. He was my fellow 2 years ago. And so he's in my office. And then... I have a liposuction specialist, Dr. David Amron, and then we have Dr. Goldberg, who does the body work.
The breast.
So your practice, you literally do the almost like A to Z, from everything from acne scar treatment all the way to wrinkle treatments to anything in between. You actually, your practice, you've got the ability to do everything you want right there in your practice.
Yeah, we had the skincare, the estheticians, we had everything. I mean,
That's amazing.
And one of the new things that people keep asking about is this vampire facelift.
Yeah, what is that exactly? It sounds horrible.
I know, it's that whole, the whole blood thing. Well, remember the PRP, the platelet-rich plasma? Remember how I said I injected into the skin?
Yes.
So that's that whole vampire where you're taking your own blood. So that's why.
So you're taking people's blood and you're spinning that down, and then the platelets are what is the clear liquid that rises to the top.
Yes.
And that's what's re-injected into areas of the face, right?
Yeah, we inject it into the superficial areas of the skin to get a better complexion. And we also will put filler. So if a patient comes in and wants that vampire facelift, you know, what it is a combination of filler in the face, anywhere in the face, whether it's in the temples, the eyebrows, the lower eyelids, smile lines, lips, cheeks, wherever, chin. And then we'll also take a little bit of blood from the patient, spin it down, get the platelets, and follow in the area where we just put the fat, the filler, we'll add the PRP, the platelet gel. So that's where the whole vampire facelift thing is combination of putting filler in the face, which gives you an immediate effect of fill, but then we follow that simultaneously with the PRP, which also helps build collagen and give us a little bit more volume, but also helps with the complexion of the skin.
Now, that's important. Now, what you just said there, Dr. Nassif, you said it helps to rebuild collagen. So as we age, right, we start to lose, our skin starts to lose its elasticity, and collagen is part of that
aging
process?
Yeah, some of the different collagen fibers, you know, that make up your skin and the elasticity are damaged, and they don't regenerate as well. So we need to do whatever we can to, you know, regenerate, shall we say, the normal collagen, and we want to get more collagen growth, and that's what helps us look younger and more refreshed.
Well, you know, I'm curious about one thing. You know, this thing called the anti-lift or anti-gravity facelift, that is, you know, again, I find it amazing that, you know, you are really, to me, one of those doctors that everybody else, you know, studies, because you're actually inventing new procedures to benefit patients. How did you come about this idea of this anti-gravity facelift? And how do you not have any visible scars from that?
Yeah,
Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, I don't know. This is more of what we call an endoscopic mid-facelift. And, this is my coined term for it. It's not something I did create, though I do have my own modifications to it. But there are incisions in the hairline, in the temple, which, you know, again, it's covered. And then there's incisions inside your mouth on the upper gums. And there's a small incision inside there, so I'm able to, you know, connect the whole temple area with the whole cheek area that's been, shall we say, elevated. So I take these little instruments and I elevate the tissue, and then I put something called an ultratine, which is a little, it's made out of stitch material, which has six little gentle hooks. And what you do is when you elevate all the tissue in the cheek, you put that little hook in from the, let's see the best way to say that. You put the hook in from the temple, you guide it to underneath around what we call the cheek fat that has fallen. We engage those little teeth to the tissue, and we lift it up, and we stitch everything back up, and now you have a new cheek that's been, now it's more full, or fuller, I should say.
So doing that actually lifts the whole structure. Sort of supports itself underneath. Is it kind of what you're doing?
Yeah, it lifts the whole structure. Especially the cheeks and the smile lines are softened. And what it does is the little implant that's in there lives for about 6 to 9 months. So in that time, then it dissolves. So now by then, after even the initial 3-4 weeks, it looks like, you know, everything is almost already healed. It stays where it's going to be.
Oh wow! So then, does it grow? Does your body grow like its own structures around that threaded a structure, or you said it dissolves.
Yeah, I mean, it dissolves, that little, the little hook, the little implant thing, it dissolves within 6 to 7 months.
Wow. So does that mean that but your face will, but the lift still stays based on, because then your skin's developed new collagen? Or
yes, and it's all scar. I mean, basically, it's created new scar tissue in that area to hold up the cheek. So it's, you know, just uses a temporary guiding template to keep the cheeks up.
That's amazing. That's amazing to me. I think it's so amazing to me to say that the technologies that are available to you today that weren't there just, say, a few years ago. And do you find that there's sort of like in the last few 5 years, let's say, that there's been a whole new slate of technologies that are available to you that weren't available before?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everything keeps evolving every year, and there's, you know, newer technology. I mean, and that's why, like, for example, I love using the PRP. The new thing that probably in the next 5 years that will be more brought into the mainstream is the stem cells. And I know doctors are saying stem cell facelifts and everything else, but when we do the liposuction, we get the fat out of the abdomen.
Right.
And this is actually, you know, a really interesting thing that's going on right now. And what happens is when you get that fat out and you spin down, I use a system called the Ativeve system, which basically is a way to get the good fats. And we take fat, we centrifuge it in the system, and what it gives us is pure, very viable young fat cells. Now, in those fat cells, that's where we have, in that fat, stem cells. And now what a company is doing, I think it's called Adacite, and we will harvest and give them the fat. It's pretty much stem cells for adult storage. So, you know, like when you're a child, you take the cord blood from the placenta, and there's a place that takes it, cord blood registry, and they actually store your blood cryogenically, or the baby's blood. And those are the rich stem cells. And like I'm doing that for all three of my children. Now this, what you can do is you take the fat, whatever you don't use for fat grafting in the face, you send it to them, and they freeze it. One, you can also use some of that fat, you know, for fat grafting later on as a second stage after, you know, let's say it's been about a year. And the other thing that you do with that is you're saving those stem cells, and they're, again, cryogenically, you know, put together so it's so they're frozen in a very viable, stage, and they've already done tests on this to see how much of the fat survives in the stem cells, and most of it does. And then if there's a problem with your health in the future, and now let's say it's 10 years from now, and you have this fat and stem cells that have been stored for all these years, by that time they're going to have specific ways to take your stem cells out of the fat and do something where it targets whatever, that certain cancer or whatever it is. And that's why I think this is new technology and something that keeping the stem cells frozen and saved, is fantastic. You know, a lot of hospitals right now, big institutions are using stem cells in many ways, and it will keep evolving.
Well, that sounds amazing. That's so good for the future.
So I love that.
So can you tell Dr. Nasef, you know, I'm getting questions like, you know, if someone wanted to have a normal facelift, you know, what's the cost involved with the normal facelift? Like, what's the range of a cost of a normal facelift, would you say, average cost for a facelift today?
Yeah, I mean, if we talk about including the operating room, the anesthesia, and the surgeon fee, and again, it depends on doing the complete neck, lifting up the jowls, lifting up the cheeks, you know, not dealing with the eyes at all, but that's pretty much a standard. I do a deep plane facelift. You know, don't quote me on this since, you know, Anna's the one who does all this for me, but, you know, it's probably about $20,000.
Yeah. So average is about $20,000 for a major facelift and neck lift, and that would include, again, because the thing is that, you know, you have, it's not just doctor's fees. There's the anesthesiologist, there's the facility that you're using, the operating room. There's a fee for all of those things. So
yes.
It's not just, one cost.
Yeah.
Cost is all inclusive.
One of the things that I would like, you know, Dr. Nasef to talk about is also like other procedures that are not necessarily surgical, but like, for example, injections like Dysport, which I love myself. Actually, you know, I do get them every 3-4 months.
Yes, you do.
And, you know, or, you know, I know that you're doing other procedures like the needles.
Yeah, the microneedling.
The microneedling.
Oh, now, what is microneedling? I've never heard of that before.
Well, they used to have something, you know, like when they have this roller, which has these little needle things, and you roll it on your face. So this is microneedling. It's a little machine that when you turn on, these little needles come out back and forth really fast at a rapid rate. And we do something called the PRP facial. Also, what we do is we create this little device with small holes, and then we put small micro holes throughout the whole face. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that much at all, very tolerable. And just by doing that, creating those little holes stimulates collagen growth, which, again, gives you better complexion to help soften the wrinkles. And then what we'll do is we'll take that, remember that platelet-rich plasma, and we'll rub it, and we'll rub it into those little small holes that have been created. So we're able to get, as a delivery system, the little holes, we get the, your product or whatever product you want to put in through those little holes in the skin. And you're red for about 6-7 hours. You may be a little, you might be a little swollen the next day, but over 6 weeks, the goal is to soften everything as your skin tone and your skin tissue begins to regenerate from that.
Yeah, because I know a lot of, I know that one of the popular things now is Botox and Dysport and all these fillers like.
Well, that's not a healer, right? That's more an aesthetic. You know, what is Dysport and Botox?
Well, Dysport or Botox, it's called a neuromodulator. But what that is you're injecting the product into the little muscles around, let's say, the corners of the eyes, the crow's feet, you know, the Levins or the frown lines, or if you want to elevate your eyebrow or little bunny lines on the lip, things like that, or on the nose, the bunny lines, or the little wrinkles in the mouth. You inject it, and it temporarily causes the muscle to become weak. And when that happens, the little wrinkles soften. So you can't frown, so that deep crease you have, you know, most of it goes away for that period of time. And the more and more you do it every 3 months, the less you'll need it. Then it might be up to 6 months, 7 months. And maybe just twice.
Well, I think Botox is a miracle drug. I know it's made from the toxin botulism, but I got to tell you, it really has done major. I used to have deep frown wrinkles in my forehead, and I tell you, they've all gone away using Botox. I think it's like almost a miracle drug.
Why do you prefer Dysport, Dr. Nassim?
Well, I mean, you know,
or do you use both?
Actually, now there's three products. Now we have to add Xeomin. So remember, they're all botulinum type A's. And the reason why I like, Dysport, the onset of action is a little bit faster and it lasts maybe a little bit longer. And it hurts a little bit less going in. But I use ice, so, you know, you don't feel it when I do it. And I really have to tell you, you know, they're all good products. So it doesn't matter. As long as you go to someone who's an experienced injector, because if you do it in the wrong place, wrong dosing, wrong whatever, you're going to cause a problem with the eyebrow or the eyelid drooping, or you get a big bruise.
I heard once that, you know, somebody became blind out of can that happen?
You know, I did hear that once, and I don't know how. They must have done something with one of the arteries of the eye or something, but that's extremely rare. I've really never heard that. I've done thousands of injections of these neuromodulators and never seen anything like that. But I did hear that.
And
before.
I will say that people who are having these, you know, you hear about these Botox parties where you go to someone's house and it's almost like a Tupperware party. Oh, you know, you've got someone injecting you with Botox. I would beware of those sort of parties. And you should go to a professional plastic surgeon to have this procedure done, I think.
Yeah, there's been people now that have had injectables and Botox products, especially I think it was in Florida. They had someone do it at a party. And that caused some major problems. I think someone was crippled and almost near death. I mean, so you have to be careful what these products are because, you know, it could be just injecting. You don't know what you're being injected with. So you always have to go to a board-certified specialist such as a facial plastic or a plastic surgeon or dermatologist that does this all the time and make sure that they're experienced injectors.
Right. It's one thing to price shop, you know, different board-certified, and I say that word, you know, importantly, board-certified, you know, facial reconstructive plastic surgeons. That's one thing, but don't be going, you know, to, you know, because of a price point, you know, with someone who's not board certified. I think that's you don't want to mess with your health. It's not worth it.
I mean, that's the other thing too. You know, I mean, right now I have to tell you, just for surgery, the prices range. I mean, you can have, you know, a facelift or a rhinoplasty very inexpensively, But the thing you always have to wonder, you know, who's doing my surgery? What kind of doctor is it? Why is the price so low? So, again, it is your face, so you just want to make sure more than anything the price should really be the last thing. It's really the qualifications of the doctor. Look at the before
That's
and afters.
So important.
Look at the reviews, you know, online. You know, you want to look at everything.
Right. Well, doctor, and I will say this much, Dr. Nasif, you are a member of so many different boards. I could go on for a whole page of just, you know, the things that you're, you know, members of, you're board certified in. But also, I think it's so commendable of you that you give back by teaching other physicians how to do these procedures. I think that's rare in this industry to you sort of do it all. You're sort of a very, very multi-talented physician.
And you volunteer, correct? You know, for the burn victims.
Not burn, but more the domestic violence.
Domestic violence.
You know, yeah. Plus, again, like you know, we have that one. Then the one doctor we teach all year long, and this is This is my fourth year doing that. So we have Dr. Undavia, who's great guy from Albert Einstein. He's my new one.
And again, you can find more about Dr. Nassif on his website, SpaldingPlasticSurgery.com. That's SPALDING. And you can follow Dr. Snyder on Twitter at Dr. Estella and me at Live Today Media.
And Dr. Nassif at Dr. Paul Nassif.
Well, that's right. My Twitter and Facebook. Follow him.
You've got millions of followers, Dr. Nassif. you're a very popular man, I will say. We want to thank you for coming on the show, Dr. Nassif, and you have to come back again soon. There's so many things to talk about in this industry that one show is just not enough, really. Until next time, this is John Johnson and Dr. Estella Snyder for Live Today, reminding you to live your life like the dreams you have are real.
You're listening to Live Today with John Johnson, right here on LA Talk Radio.